What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast, grateful for that one day of summer we had. Coming up, we catch our breath after those epic championships, semi-final first legs, and preview the return meetings. Bolton and Oxford and Crewe and Crawley go at it under the arch. And Huddersfield order a duff as Stevenage revel in a return. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. Hello there, listener. Hope you're well. Now, if this podcast was a Friends episode, it would be entitled The One Where Matt's Got the Builders In. So if you hear any bashing and crashing, don't worry. It's just my downstairs loo being improved upon. I'll let you know how that goes maybe in the next couple of weeks. We are here to talk about more important things than that, although some could say that who would be an accurate description of a couple of those playoff games that we saw in the championship. I've got Adrian Clark and Sam Parkin back with me. You all right, chaps?
Hello. Hello, Matt. Yeah, exciting day for you, by the sounds of it. So, yeah, very good.
Yeah, exciting slash expensive. Sam, how you doing?
Very good, guys. Good to see you both.
Yeah, let's take care of some housekeeping before we crack on then. Our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the show notes. It's 18 plus and remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, later on, BBC Match of the Day commentator Robin Cowan is going to join us to preview the League One playoff final. But first, let's get into some news. And it is all change at Huddersfield Town. No surprise, Andre Breitenreiter left by mutual consent after setting fire to pretty much everything on his way out. He's been replaced by former Swansea and Barnsley boss Mike Duff, who signed a three-year deal. Whatever was to come had to be right and a good fit, and that is exactly what this feels like, said Duff, who is Huddersfield's sixth permanent manager since Carlos Corberan left the Terriers in July 2022. Sammy, he knows the league after being in it with Cheltenham and Barnsley. It's an important gig for him, though, right, after the Swansea misstep?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. Wouldn't say it felt underwhelming when I saw the announcement, because I think that's unfair, and maybe I'm just a little bit still thinking about that Swansea spell where obviously it just didn't go well whatsoever. I think mitigating circumstances, I think that was a bad fit really for what Swansea have been and what they were trying to be again, which is, you know, that really heavy possession based football team, which Michael Duff hasn't, you know, encouraged in his sides. He's got great success by being kind of high energy, defensively really good. You know, he likes that 3-5-2 system. And I think Huddersfield, absolutely on the face of it, is a much better fit. If you think about the last two, three, four managers that they maybe had in charge there, and in terms of the playing squad that is in place. And yeah, good record at the level, obviously promoted to League One with Cheltenham, consolidated them and did that outstanding work at Barnsley last season, getting into that playoff final. So yeah, makes a lot of sense. And we'll see what the kind of stability is like at Huddersfield next season, because it has been absolute chaos there over the last 12 months. Inevitably led to that relegation.
Yeah, important appointment for the club as well, isn't it, Adrian, to get right? Because they've been cycling through managers, as I mentioned there, but also different styles of managers. There doesn't seem to have been any joined up thinking in the previous appointments.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Yeah, I think he's a better fit than pretty much all of the other ones were. Yeah, I quite like watching Duff's teams play, even though they don't have a lot of the ball. They've got a good energy. They really press you and they sort of break ever so quickly. I like the two up top. I think it always causes the opposition a little bit of, you know, a few headaches. Because, you know, the centre-halves these days are too used to playing against lone strikers. I think if you're bold enough to play with two up top, it can really unsettle opponents. Yeah, it just feels the right fit. And you would expect Huddersfield to be top end, wouldn't you, of League One. So quite a good gig for him as well, really. You know, it's a big club. They'll be able to attract decent players, I would imagine. After what Breitenreiter sort of said on his way out, there might be a big turnover in personnel. And that's probably long overdue. So, and he's obviously someone that knows the level. He knows the caliber of player that you need to at least be in the playoffs, because that's where he's used to being at League One level. So yeah, he'll have good knowledge, I think, of who to target. And yeah, I think it could be quite an exciting summer, actually, at the John Smiths in terms of recruitment. So yeah, I think this is the soundest appointment they've made since Carlos Corberan.
They got a very good relationship with Chelsea in terms of loans. It'll be interesting to see if they can maintain that now that they're in League One. Elsewhere, Stevenage have named Alex Ravel as their manager for the second time. Former Borough player was in interim charge after Steve Evans walked out. He previously was Stevenage boss in February 2020. They were relegated from League Two in the COVID hit season, but they were reprieved following a points deduction for Macclesfield. The chairman, Phil Wallace, told the club's website, "We believe the dynamics of our squad dictated that Alex was the natural successor to Steve." Clarkie, I'm going to translate that. You tell me if you think I've got this right. This was a cheap fix for us, so we've done it.
I think that is partly true. Yeah, because it is a cheap fix. He's already on the payroll as Steve Evans' assistant. I suppose they're thinking, well, Revel was a big part. Well, he coached the players and he coached the players to play a certain brand of football that Steve Evans wanted. So it's just going to be a continuation of that. And obviously the recruitment of the players in that squad has been built around Steve Evans' style of play. So they're just thinking, well, this is the guy that coached the players day in, day out in this style of play. Let's give him another crack. I do think it's a risky move. I do, because there is a difference between being a coach and a manager. His win rate in League Two wasn't good. It's probably a bit unfair, I think, to blame him for the relegation. I think he was only in charge for a few games before COVID hit. Previously it had been Graham Wesley, so that's probably a bit harsh, but he did have a 26% win rate as Stevenage boss in League Two. Now Evans during his time had a 47.5% win rate, so and there is only one Steve Evans, thank goodness. And I just think he is an impossible person to mimic, really. So, I would have just gone for someone with a track record of maybe playing this sort of direct style of football rather than go with Revel. But I kind of understand it. My sense is that they'll fall off a little bit and then they'll make a change early next season. But I wish Alex Revel all the best, of course. But I'm sceptical that it'll work.
There you go, listener. You can tick off Clarkey having a pop at Steve Evans on your What the EFL bingo card there. Sam, were you ever at a club where the number two stepped up to number one? Or if not, do you have any strong opinions on the merits or otherwise thereof?
I'm sure I was. I can't think on the spot.
It's awkward, I guess, when the first thing where you have to stop calling him Alex and start calling him Gaffer.
Yeah, well, I had Jim Magilton was my captain my first year at Ipswich, and he became the manager the following summer. So that was really difficult. Probably in this case, because Jim was such a central person in the dressing room. Excuse me. The life and soul, really, you know. So from going from someone who you could go to and speak to about football and things off the pitch to all of a sudden becoming the boss was really difficult, I think, especially for his mates in the squad, the experienced guys who all of a sudden he was having to leave out. And I'm sure Alex Ravel would have been probably the in-between if you look at the demeanour and the characters of Rayner and Steve Evans. So listen, he's done it before, and you'd like to think that he'll have learnt being, you know, an assistant rather than on the front line, if you like, for the last year or two. But I have to agree with Clarkey, just because they've been in the ascendancy, there's been an upward trajectory at Stevenage, brilliant promotion, obviously, what, 5 points from the playoffs this year. All of a sudden, that momentum just might be hindered by this disappointment. You hope not. And his first task will be trying to keep the squad together, I'm sure, and trying to make one or two additions. They've got, you know, the makings of a really competitive side there, but you just think that they've just had the foot on the gas for so long now, it'd be maybe quite difficult to maintain that.
We shall see, I suppose. All right, next we're going to get into some previews of the second leg of the Championship playoffs. Very good of the four teams in the Championship playoffs to allow us to focus on the second legs only, given how pretty dull both first legs were. Maybe a little harsh on Southampton West Brom, but certainly that Leeds Norwich game underwhelmed. Clarkey, Sam floated the idea on our WhatsApp group of single leg semi-finals. What do you think to that?
No, I don't. I don't want it because I mean it works in the National League, doesn't it?
Less work for us, isn't it, Clarkie?
Yeah, less work for us. That's selfishly. Yeah. I'm thinking of the old wallet. But
well, in the quarterfinals and the last 16, and
I think so. Let's do that. Yep. Let's open it up. Because finals are often quite dull, aren't they? They're quite cagey. I don't. I think the two-legged. You know. The classic Peterborough Sheffield Wednesday, but you do get that little ebb and flow. It's a bit like a test match where stories and narratives develop over the course of the two legs. You've always got that potential for a crazy comeback. Yeah, I kind of like it. It is unusual for the first two legs to end in goalless and be so cagey as this one. So, no, I'm all for the two-leggers, to be honest. They've created some amazing matches, some great memories down the years. For me, the one-off games are almost always, not always, of course, but more often than not, defensive in sort of tactical sense.
Barkey, is the quality of the player in the Championship playoff scenario, is that what we saw the other day in that they can defend so well, they can close games down in comparison to League One and League Two, where maybe they don't have that defensive nous. Is that a part of it, the calibre of the player?
Could be. It could be. But then you've got better calibre forwards, haven't you? So you can sort of flip it around. Do you know what I think? My theory on it is that all four teams came into the playoffs in very iffy form. And I think if you're in iffy form, what do you do? You do the basics. You make sure you don't concede. You work on your off the ball work. You get the platform, don't you? Because you don't trust yourself. You're not in that sort of free flowing form, top form. So yeah, I think that was the factor. I think none of them felt confident going into the games, so they went to a sort of negative mindset. That's my take anyway.
Become so solid like crew, maybe is the answer. We'll get to them later. Let's start with Leeds against Norwich then. This one's on Thursday. The first leg produced just 3 shots on target, though Daniel Farker felt his team had a goal harshly ruled out. It's a fascinating one, this, isn't it, Sam? Because Leeds were unbeaten home all season until the previous 2 games, which they've lost. They've only scored once in the last 3. So you're thinking they've got the quality maybe over Norwich, and also they've got that strong home record. But if they go behind here, boy, it's going to get nervy.
Yeah, and there's a big contrast in terms of Norwich's home form and their away form as well. So there was that feeling that, you know, Norwich could have done with getting a goal and going to Elland Road with an advantage, which obviously isn't the case. But Leeds just aren't at it, are they? And I know it goes out the window to a degree when you get to this stage of the season, but I thought it was interesting that he changed the setup. I can't recall him really doing that this season, Daniel Farker. So to play, you know, an extra midfield player and take one of those forward players out of the side, I think just underlines that he's having to try a different tact on the training ground and take it into the game. So I think that shows you that all is not well. They didn't create much. Felt they were a little bit hard done by the potential penalty, although whether that was inside or outside is debatable on Nonto. And Daniel Farker seemed to be suggesting that one of the angles showed that Ruta was onside for the Firpo disallowed goal, but it was very close. So I think that's, probably a performance which you may see Daniel Farker change the personnel. I'd be surprised if he went with that extra midfielder again. I would anticipate one of the forward players coming in, James, Bamford, Piru. He's probably going to have options there, especially in a home game. For Norwich, I think, give or take, that's pretty much their best side, maybe Ashley Barnes aside. They were quite an attacking lineup that they set out, just didn't create enough, apart from maybe that Sargent header and one or two speculative efforts. So nothing between them. I really can't call it, but yeah, Leeds need a little bit of impetus from somewhere.
Sargent had out for this one for Norwich, Clark. He only won 6 away games in the regular season, the joint fewest in the top 10. This might be another low-scoring cagey affair then, mightn't it?
I don't see why it will be any different, to be honest. Yeah, because Norwich, I talked about sort of not having that much confidence going into the game, so that's why it was cagey. If all the matches were away in the season, they'd have finished 19th. So they're really not good travellers. So they're going to absolutely focus on negating leads, aren't they? And then hoping for a little bit of, you know, magic from one of their forwards, maybe on the break. Yeah, I do think it'd be cagey. If Leeds score early, then I think they can start to have a little bit of fun with it, and maybe they will find that momentum. And because Willie Nonto's, you know, he's maybe the one that looked sharper than some of the others at the weekend. I would definitely bring in Dan James. I think his pace and directness will get the crowd going. It'll take Leeds up the pitch. It might frighten Norwich City a little bit because he's got that speed. I don't think it works with Routier up front. I just think he's absolutely more of a number 10. He's a good provider. So yeah, it's got to be Pirou or Bamford if he's fit to come back in for me. So yeah, I'd expect a couple of changes personally. I still would side with Leeds because I think that they're one good goal away from maybe just kickstarting that battery again. But until they get it, they could limp out. They could limp out of the whole campaign if they don't get that goal. So yeah, it's a huge game because it'll be failure, won't it, for Daniel Farke and the players if they don't at least make the final here. And you would fear maybe for Daniel Farke's future in the job if they lost this match. So high pressure, high stakes. But I still think Leeds are the better team.
Clark has preempted me there, Sam. I was going to say for either manager, if they don't get promoted, are they both likely to be seeking new employment next season? Probably Farke more so than Wagner. Although Wagner's not very popular, is he, amongst sections of the Norwich support?
No, but they've been able to turn it around a little bit this season. And obviously the new sporting director or whatever came in and stuck with him. And the form has been, you know, pretty good, hasn't it? You know, especially in those home games, which was a big disappointment, I think, towards the tail end of last season, if memory serves me right. That's where the majority of the criticism was coming from, because they were unable to win in front of their own supporters. So, I'd probably say, yeah, maybe Farke just slightly more needs this, although I'm sure, yeah, there'll be some criticism for Wagner. But I think he's shown enough in the second half of the season that with the right additions, and I'm sure they will refresh the squad in the summer, Norwich, that they could get it right next time around.
Yeah, okay. Well, more pressure on Leeds going into this one, certainly. They did win both regular season games between the sides. Norwich have only won on one of their last six trips to Elland Road. Goalless two in the first leg between West Bromwich Albion and Southampton, albeit there were far more chances than at Carrow Road. They'll go again at St Mary's on Friday night. Adrian, always more pressure on the home team after a 0-0 in the first leg. And we talked about how everybody's stuttering into this playoff campaign. I wonder if that maybe works in West Brom's favour a little bit, because they're the team going into it with the least expectation.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. They're probably unlucky not to have got a goal in the first game. Dean Garner had a couple of good efforts, didn't he? So, and the goalie was good, I thought, for Saints. McCarthy, who's come in, obviously, for the injured Bazunu. So, yeah, West Brom are awkward opponents. Yeah, I see this is more chance of an upset than maybe the Leeds one, weirdly enough. I'm not quite sure why. With Saints, I don't know about the switch of system lately. Gone with three at the back, hasn't he? You know, that 4-3-3 works so well for most of this campaign. And yeah, towards the end, you know, they got a good result, I know, at Leeds. But I don't know about changing the shape at the business end. It will be a boost for them because Che Adams will probably be back. Ross Stewart is fit and available. So they do have options up front. I thought the team was just a little bit weird. Maybe there are Saints fans out there that you know, can correct me, but in terms of form or injury issues, but I don't know how David Brooks doesn't get in the starting 11, for example. I just think he's absolute class, and he would be in my team. I think maybe the fact that it was a 3-5-2 means that he gets biffed off. And for me, I wouldn't be biffing off David Brooks to change the system. But personally, I just think he's a cracking player. Maybe you could say the same about Ryan Fraser, who's been superb for large swathes of this season. But again, in that system, where does Ryan Fraser play? I think they suit 4-3-3 better, personally. Do you know what? I don't think this is going to be full of goals either. I think, what are West Brom going to do? What's Corbrand going to do? He's going to be really tight, isn't he? He's going to set up cagily. He's going to look to stop Southampton. So, yeah, it's going to be another nerve jangler, I think.
Might it be settled, Sam, in the dugouts as much as it is on the pitch? I'm just thinking about the extra experience of this situation that that Carlos Corberan has.
Yeah, I think when we were going into the playoffs, definitely the ingredient of having managers that have had the success in promotions from the second tier and the playoffs would come into my reckoning. I'm not so sure now, having got the goalless draw, going back to St Mary's, having the option, as Clarkie says, of reverting to what has got them such success this season. And, you know, my take on the game was it did actually make them a little bit more stable defensively. And I think the sense was they were going to have to defend the box. And aerially, I thought it worked, apart from the chance for Dean Garner, which Clarkie referred to, which was a brilliant leap. Probably the best two bits of play from West Brom came through Fellows on the right-hand side, who put identical deliveries in. First one was brilliantly attacked by Dean Garner. The second one, nobody covered the space at the back post, and it was a brilliant bit of play in such a stodgy second half where no team was making chances. So that was a bit of a let off. But for as good as they looked kind of defensively in the stable, I completely agree with Clarkie what he was saying there, that the rhythm, the passing options were just limited because you've got one less forward player on the pitch, and it actually took them a little bit of time to adapt. West Brom were nicking it quite high early on. So I think that 100% impacted them, and I would be really surprised if it's not a 4-3-3. The Brooks point is another pertinent one. He came on and played as a second striker behind Stewart. So the attack had a different look to it, but where he would get into that side in the 3-5-2 from the off is probably questionable. So yeah, there's lots to think about for Russell Martin. The big one for West Brom, I would say, in the aftermath of this game is that Thomas Asante just doesn't look at it at the moment. And with Jed Wallace waiting in the wings and having played that position quite regularly, false nine or whatever you want to call it, I think that could be a change that Corberan makes. But yeah, I mean, it pretty much summed up with 10 minutes to go. Corberan went back five, and I thought... And it was almost like the dying embers of that Colchester Crew game from the other day. Not as extreme, but neither team really attacked the last 10 minutes. It was a declaring that the 0-0 will do us both.
We'll take it, yeah. Yeah, no, you're right about Southampton. They did need to shore up defensively. But yeah, what you gain there, you lose so much going forward. I think at home, with the emphasis on needing to win, I think they've got to go back to what got them on that. On that role, personally.
All right, Friday night for that one. Then we're going to look ahead to the League One playoff final next. Bolton Wanderers and Oxford's playoff for a place in the Championship next season when they meet at Wembley on Saturday afternoon. Wanderers bested Barnsley, whilst Oxford ousted Peterborough. Joining us to tell us more about Oxford and how they shape up ahead of the final is the incomparable Robin Cowan of The Dub, an Oxford United podcast available from the BBC. How are you feeling, Robin? That's the first question. Have the nerves kicked in yet?
Do you know what? As we record on Wednesday, this is like the best bit, isn't it? Because nothing bad has happened. It's all anticipation and excitement. So yeah, feeling really good at the moment. Not really nervous. I'm just not sure how nervous. Sure, we'll be nervous on the day. But you know what, Matt? I feel like the expectations are pretty low. Bolton Wanderers, you know, they probably should be in the Championship. They're an excellent team. They're going to be heavy favourites. Haven't looked at the odds, but I'm assuming they're going to be pretty heavy favourites. So it's almost quite freeing. We snuck in on the last day to get in the playoffs, and we got to Wembley. So it's actually quite a nice, it's been a nice sort of, I hate the word journey, but the way it's happened to get to Wembley, it's been great, actually. It was obviously a very tense couple of legs against Peterborough, very tight. So that was pretty nervy. But actually, it's, feeling personally pretty good. I can't speak for all Oxford United fans, but I believe it's been a long week for them in anticipation. But no, I think, you know, vibe is good at the moment.
Yeah, I make you, you know, game underdogs here. I do, because you defended so well against Peterborough and for during the run-in. I mean, you've barely given any goals away. I think 5 goals against in the last 10 games. I thought the centre-halves were magnificent in that second leg. The left-back, Joe Bennett, too. The goalkeeper was brilliant. There was a real resilience about Oxford. And I just think if you can handle Peterborough, you can maybe handle Bolton.
Well, I hope so. It's been a real sea change, and actually it was that 5-0 live on Sky against Bolton Wanderers at their place. And since then, that was a real turning point. You know, we kind of said at the time, this has to be a turning point. And it actually has been. I feel like, you know, for the players and for the fans, that was a real low point. And I think Des Buckingham was under quite a lot of pressure there. A lot of fans weren't having him. So I think that was the big thing. And I think essentially what's happened is that he was playing Greg Lee at left back. He's pretty much a winger, really. And he was banging the goals when he first came. But now it's kind of like a real flat back four, no real marauding forward at all from the fullbacks. And that sort of worked because we got loads of pace. We got Josh Murphy and Owen Dale. So they don't have the kind of overlapping support. But at the moment, they haven't really needed it. Actually, the kind of little tweak there has worked pretty well.
Robin, you kind of answered it there, but it's probably been a reoccurring theme on this podcast, me and Clarkey talking about Cameron Brannigan. As good as he is, he can't be the nominal holding midfield player under Carl Robinson. I think that was our sentiment. Is it? I mean, I did a lot of reading and what have you before the first leg that I was at. Is it generally a really good watch, what you've seen latterly under Buckingham?
Yeah, no, I mean, it has been. I mean, the sort of run-in towards the end of the, you know, the last few weeks of the season, it was ridiculous. You know, the 5-0 against Peterborough, there was a 4-0, like another 4-0. It was, you know, everything was coming off. But I do think, as Adrian said there, the defence has been, that's what gets you kind of to where you want to be. So that's been the big sea change. But yeah, it has. And I think that the big thing for us, Josh Murphy, I mean, the sort of redemptive arc he's been on, like under Robinson and then under Manning, actually, it was like nowhere near it. He was having a really tough time, you know, just every decision he made was wrong and it didn't come off. And suddenly, you know, Carl Robinson, when he signed him, said he's going to be the best player in League One. And kind of 18 months later, he kind of looks like he might be. It's been absolutely incredible. And yeah, it's been his sort of performances and his confidence that's kind of propelled Oxford to where they are. He's out of contract at the end of the season. So, that's going to be interesting.
Got a win, basically.
Basically, yeah. I mean, he'd come out, though, and said publicly he's now feeling very settled. He's got a young child and he's finally feeling, after quite a few, you know, bumpy months, that he likes it here. So that's obviously something we want to hold on to. But I'm sure he's got an agent who is saying, don't say that.
You know? Yeah, it's funny because I actually saw the first game you had after Manning left. It was against Chelsea in the EFL Trophy and absolutely battered them 5-0, and he scored twice there and he just looked like a man who was free of some stresses that had been holding him down. Funny how it works, isn't it? If you do go up, and obviously it's an if at this stage, how well equipped are Oxford to deal with the Championship as is, do you think?
Oh, not very well, I'd say, at the moment.
I was tiptoeing around that, but yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it'd be, after the kind of euphoria, I think, oh, okay, this is going to be very, very hard. I'm not absolutely sure how we deal with that, if I'm totally honest. Is, you know, a lot of focus has been on the new stadium and, you know, it's a lot of money that they're pouring into that. So obviously the Championship, you know, comes with, you know, with his attractions, and it, you know, it'd be fantastic to get there. But yeah, actually, in reality, the squad would need quite a big overhaul, and I'm not sure how many would actually be able to be there. So yeah, almost like want to win the final and then not go up. So, I mean, I'm probably in the
doesn't
minority
work like
there.
That, Robin. Come on,
I'm probably in the minority there. It'd be fantastic, but yeah, I just think. Yeah, I guess a bit like, you know, we were beaten by Wickham in 2020 in the final, you know, in front of no fans. So that was very, very strange. And actually, they made a pretty good fist of it, didn't they? They did go down, but they didn't do too badly. So maybe it'd be kind of something like that. It's a bit like that debate, isn't it, about, you know, the Championship teams coming out to the Premier League. It could be pretty miserable. So yeah, we'll have to see.
Worry about it when it happens, Robin.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, it's obviously clashing with the final weekend of the WSL. and you'll no doubt be commentating on one of those games. So what? How are you going to follow it? Are you going to have to completely blank it out and then find out afterwards?
Never works.
No, well, it depends who's listening to this. If my bosses are, then of course, fully focused. if, however, yeah. Sort of in the second half of the WSL game I'm at, you see me cheering a throw-in. maybe that professionalism has just slipped. Yeah,
it's got to be. Yeah, it's got to be done. Yeah.
I feel like it has. I mean, it is what it is. You know, football has given me a lot, but you know, this is the occasion where it's taken away slightly. But we'll have. You know, I'll be able to maybe catch most of the second half as long as we're not, you know, out of it by then. I'll be quite happy.
I can tell you what will happen. You'll mute all your relevant WhatsApp groups. You'll delete all your social medias off your phone. And then someone you haven't heard from in about 20 years will text you midway through and go, oh, are you 3-0 down or 3-0 up already?
That's exactly what will happen, won't it? Yeah. And then, yeah, just be very subdued for the rest of that commentary.
Well, look, we wish you and Oxford all the very best for the final, however you're going to watch it. And thank you so much for your time again today.
Our total pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Many thanks, as ever, to Robin. Bolton, then, Sam, seeking a return to the Championship, having last been in it in 2019, going for a second promotion under Ian Everett. But as we've spoken about with Robin there, the pressure is on. Is there any kind of relevance to the 5-0 win they had at the Tough Sheet against Oxford in March, or does that not even come into the planning for this game for either team, I suppose, but mainly for Bolton?
Yeah, I think the planning, absolutely. You'd look at the tactical setup for that game. Obviously, Robin referenced the changes that Oxford have made, which are quite subtle ones, really. When you look at the 11 as it is today in comparison to that, there's barely been a change. I think the midfield, maybe there was one different player. Obviously, he's going with Branigan, Rodriguez and Goodwin now, which is a good little trio, really technical depth footballers there. But yeah, Greg Lee, the left back, and the kind of setup defensively seems to be the one alteration. So I think Ian Everett will absolutely look at the 11 and the game plan that he had for that game and probably go in a similar fashion. Yeah, I think they obviously didn't play brilliantly in those two legs. Very different games they were. Defensively, they were all over the place, I think, in that second game against Barnsley, the centre-halves in particular. And Clarkey said during that interview, Oxford have been brilliantly defensively during that time. I think they've conceded over double what Oxford have. So defensively, they're not perfect, but I would say going forward, there's certainly more goals in Bolton's armoury than there is Oxford's. They've got more obvious threats. They've got great options across the front. You know, even with the impact you can get from Jerome, Adebayo, and you've got two players that are capable of getting you 20 goals in any season, I think, in Collins and Dion Charles. So I see them probably having more of a goal threat, but right now, Oxford are the better defensive team. So it's set up really nicely.
10 points between them, Clarkey, at the end of the league season. If you are Ian Everett, are you pumping your players up and saying, look, by any metric you want to use, we're the better team here. We finished higher above them in the league. We've just thrashed them. Go out and do it again. Or are you being a bit more cagey given the stakes here?
Yeah, I'm not sure what Ian Everett is like. Yeah, I mean, you'd want to fill your players with confidence, of course. You don't want them to be overconfident and start to assume that they're gonna roll them over, because it will be tougher, because that back four just doesn't move anymore. They don't really move out of position, and that was the key, I think, to them grinding it out against Peterborough United. They didn't leave that many holes. They still had to defend their box a lot, and they relied really on their goalie and you know, three of their back four. I thought the right back struggled. Three of their back four to basically repel everything that was thrown at them. It'd be harder for them against the front two, because that's what Bolton will offer, probably Charles and Collins. I think the key battleground, because I think in the midfield you've got six really technical players. It's going to be great. It's going to be really good to watch in there. And it's a lovely, lovely battle. But for me, it'll be won or lost out wide, and maybe down Murphy's side against Dacus-Cogley. Dacus-Cogley will probably push really high and maybe look to engage Joe Bennett if he's the one who plays at left back, which then leaves, you know, a little bit of space potentially for Josh Murphy to run at the right-sided centre-back, who's normally Toll. So that could be an area that a fragility for Bolton. And if they are struggling, they'll pull Dacres-Cogley back. And if they pull Dacres-Cogley back, then it really imbalances their forward play. So, yeah, it's going to be a fascinating tactical battle. But I think out wide on both sides, because Bolton's wing-backs are so important and Oxford's wingers are so important. Yeah, that's the key battleground, that the pair that has the biggest influence will likely win the game.
Just quickly, because this Bolton squad hasn't changed enormously, just over a year ago, they've smashed Plymouth Argyle 4-0 in the Papa John's Trophy final at Wembley. So a lot of them have been there.
Yeah, true.
Tough game as well against the Plymouth side that were absolutely firing at the time, and they dismantled them. And it was kind of, Clark, you mentioned the technical midfield players, but the power as well that they have, Bolton, in their ranks. That was a big difference maker. So, midfield, absolutely key.
What was also funny, because these are two really good passing teams, but in the playoffs, semi-finals, both teams boomed it at times. Bolton boomed it against Barnsley to sort of miss out the press, which isn't really like them. And Oxford against Peterborough, they started lashing it over the top for Murphy to chase. So again, I think they've added a little bit of extra to their armoury. So but it'd be interesting to see how this one plays out tactically. Because in the season, they both wanted loads of the ball. But in the playoff semi-finals, it seemed much less of a priority, because Oxford had less than 30% against Peterborough. So, we shall see. I don't know if Sam agrees. I make Bolton slight favourites. But for me, Oxford will be a much tougher nut to crack this time around.
Same for you, Sam?
I'm not going to back Oxford in the playoff final, am I? No, I think so. But I absolutely concur with what Robin was kind of saying. To be the underdogs in comparison to how they were facing up against Wickham a couple of years ago, I think that just will suit them a little bit. And I think the reality obviously is, if they stay in the League One for another year, it's not a disaster. The building blocks are in place. They've got the new stadium on the way. They seem to have a really good young manager at the helm. For Bolton to not make it this time will be pretty devastating.
Well, past four on Saturday is the kickoff for that one. Dacres-Cogley, by the way. I'm pretty sure that's the estate agents I brought my house. It certainly sounds like it. All right, we'll have a look at the League Two playoff final next. So this is at 1 o'clock on Sunday lunchtime, a tale of the unexpected. I don't think many of us, certainly none of us on this podcast, thought it would be Crawley v Crewe. But here we are. It's Crawley's first ever trip to Wembley. We'll talk about them soon, Adrian, but you were there for the second leg of the game against MK Dons. 8-1, the aggregate score. What on earth happened to MK Dons over the course of this tie?
I don't know where to start, really. I mean, by the end, it could have been 9 or 10. You know, if the game had gone on much longer, it would have been. You know, their hearts were absolutely broken. In the match that I saw, they obviously got off to a terrible start, overplaying at the back, and they lost the ball and they score. They changed the goalie. Mike Williamson changed the goalie, didn't he? Brought in Philip Marshall. I don't think anyone was really expecting that. And for me, he got down really slowly for a couple of the goals. It certainly backfired. The atmosphere was very weird as well at the MK Stadium. I think that that didn't help the players. So yeah, it was. I don't know. They just brought two of their worst performances of the season into those big games, didn't they? It wasn't a real MK. But credit Crawley. They were brilliant. Absolutely brilliant to watch. Everything Crawley did was positive and with positive intent. The way they closed down, you know, there was no sitting on this lead. We're going to hunt you down high up the pitch and we're going to win it off you and we're going to score. And they did. And then once they'd broken them, boy, did they pass it through the lines superbly. Liam Kelly, unreal again. Lolas was great. All of them really were in top form. So, yeah, look, if Crawley can do that to MK Dons, I think they can do it to Crewe. But Crewe have their own strengths as well, which will be different to MK.
Two real shocks here, I think, Sam, weren't there? I mean, Doncaster, we've been talking about them for what feels like a couple of months as, you know, starting off, oh, they might be dark horses to, right, they're nailed on for the playoffs, to they're the favourites to win the playoffs. Crewe did exceptionally well to turn around that two-goal deficit from the first leg and then to get through on pens with the keeper who's only on an emergency loan, barely played for them. It's some story, that, for the railway men, as I like calling them.
Yeah, incredible. Both games. Yeah, I thought it was all set up, Doncaster, MK Dons final, and I thought it would be an incredibly, you know, tough call to make on those two sides. I just thought that they would probably breeze through the semis, was my take. And That's understandable. I think over the last 12, Donny had 32 points and Crewe had 10 points, which just shows you the level of confidence that Doncaster were going into the playoffs with and the lack thereof for Crewe. Crewe and their players. So this was an amazing performance, defensive performance, where they really limited Doncaster to next to nothing. There was a few, I think Molyneux hit the outside of the post. There was one or two other half opportunities, but they obviously started really quickly, got the two goals. I mean, he made four changes from that first leg, which I think was pretty bold. He changed the setup. Dimitriou and Ed Turns, who's a 21-year-old on loan from Brighton, haven't played since, I think, early April. He's missed the last seven games, Ed Turns. So that was a bit of a gamble putting him back in. But those two were brilliant. I mean, Dimitriou at both ends.
Yeah. Yeah.
9 goals and 6 assists. I'm not even sure if that's adding on the goal he got in the playoffs. The marking was pretty feeble, and I think they referenced it quite frequently on the Sky coverage. They're, I think, the second worst team from set pieces, Donny, in a division, and have conceded more goals from crosses than anyone else. And that obviously was a weakness that crew identified, took advantage of. But yeah, it was a brilliant, brilliant defensive display, completely took me by surprise, and some good antics from the goalkeeper as well. I don't know if you've seen that, lobbing his Lotetala's water bottle into the I'm not sure you can maybe get away with that, but I enjoyed it.
I mean, you got to admire it. You really have got to admire it, but it's maybe going over the edge, isn't it? I mean, that is, there's no goalies union there.
But what's the difference between gaining an advantage in terms of writing down where every penalty taker goes and having immediate access to that, and then taking that advantage away from someone else? Because you're both essentially doing the same thing, right?
You've stole his property though, haven't you, really? I mean, kind of.
Club property redistributed to a supporter.
Yeah, I mean, he's nicked it. He's nicked his water bottle. I think it is bang out of order. And I don't know if he's welcome back in the goalies union. But
the detail did impress me, to be honest. He had, like, you know, young lad, not played much and stuff like that written on the bottle. So that would probably add to the, what's the terminology, the amount that he'd try and put off a certain player. And then obviously right foot tends to open up. You know, there was a lot.
It's got to be so much guesswork, though, because how many Donny players have taken penalties or crew players? You know, they only normally have one or two penalty takers, don't you? So it's got to be proper guesswork, hasn't it?
For me, you're delving into, I don't know, you're looking at the footage of them having shots, maybe, or when they, if they've been got into good presentable positions, and then, yeah, maybe just that technique. I don't know. You like you say, you're not going to find, like, the Doncaster inexperienced left back having taken. Yeah. Taken many penalties, but yeah, I was impressed with the detail, and I suppose what they're looking at as well, Clarkie, and I'm no goalkeeper, but you know, they always talk about the standing leg, I think, where it's kind of set in relation to where the ball, so you can probably, you know, gamble a little bit if you're watching the way that they approach the ball, and maybe you can get off a little bit earlier to your diving side.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see if it goes all the way to penalties in the final. Crewe won both meetings between the teams in the regular season. Crawley haven't beaten them in any of the last seven. Yes, Adrian.
Yeah, I've just got to say the goalie's good, so good, Corey Addai. He saved a penalty in that game at MK. That goal's prevented stat is just off the scale. You know, easily the best keeper in the division in terms of shot stopping. And I just had a little peek at during the course of the season, Crawley had the highest expected goals against in open play in the division. You know, more than Sutton, more than Forest Green, more than Colchester, Grimsby. You know, they're not a watertight side. So they will probably have to rely on Corey Addai at times during this final. But I've got to say, when they do have the ball, that they can be a real handful, I think, for Crewe. So I think this might be quite an entertaining final. I could see it being having a few goals.
As I say, 1 o'clock on Sunday, it gets underway. Speaking of watertight, that is what Charlie and Matt are trying to do to my downstairs bathroom as we speak. So we better wrap this up so they can crack on with it. Before we go, a reminder that our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. It's 18+. And remember, always gamble responsibly. You can follow us on X at EFL What The, on Instagram and TikTok at What The EFL. And that leads me to our tweet of the week. Now, I feel like, Sam, I've been kind of predicating these a little bit and telling you my feelings as I read them out. So this is just a straight read. Then I want your reaction. It comes from Max Dean of MK Dons, who posts two pictures, one of him celebrating a goal with a knee slide, the other of him and some pals clapping the supporters at the end of a game. He says, season finished, 19 goals and 5 assists, punching fist emoji. Sorry to our fans for the poor ending, but your support throughout the season means everything to us. Heart emoji, tags at MK Dons FC. Thoughts, Sam?
Well, he's a good player. I'm going to caveat it here. And I thought he was quite bright. He's really mobile. He's very determined. But I wasn't sure with some of his histrionics. What's the word?
Yeah, histrionics.
During the playoffs. So, he needs to watch himself a little bit because he could have been quite easily red carded in that second game. That's an understatement. But I'm not really having that. It's a bit of a humble brag, isn't it, the first line there.
That's the thing that got me about this, Clarky.
Yeah, it's a bit of a humble brag, isn't it?
I was looking at the Twitter accounts of all the teams who lost in the playoffs because we always do a winner. Yeah. Fans have been great, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So I wanted to see a bit of contrition.
Yeah.
And he's not showing much contrition by pointing out his stats at the very start of the post.
Yeah. Maybe that should have been the follow-up tweet, you know. But
on a personal note, delighted to have.
Yeah. I just think to start it with, didn't I do well? 19 goals and 5 assists. And then say, but everyone else a little bit crap, weren't they? Sorry about that. Thanks for your support. So, yeah, I really like his sort of energy and he's such a determined player. He's only 20, remember. He's a baby. He's not grown up yet, has he? He was very impetuous during the game. And he's got to watch himself. He'll get sent off a lot if he carries on that way. But maybe that's part of what makes him such a good player. So he's just got to find the right balance and act. But yeah, in terms of this tweet, I'm not having it at all. Not having it at all. But although our friend of the pod, Jonathan Harries, has backed him. First reply, phenomenal season. You've given absolutely everything. And it's a pleasure watching him on the pitch. You know, I understand why MK Don fans love him. But yeah, as tweet of the week, this is a 3 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, Crawley fans enjoying piling in on the replies. Steve says, if you stamped on someone like that down Midsummer Boulevard, you'd be doing time, you absolute mug. You and your teammates got exactly what they deserved over these two legs. A lesson in football. Isn't social media just fantastic? That's going to bring us to the end of this week's pod. Thanks to Robin Cam for joining us earlier, to Adrian and Sam for their wisdom too. We'll be back next week looking back on those two playoff finals and previewing the big one to come. Wembley, with the famous What The EFL, and we're going to Wembley. We shall be in attendance for the Championship playoff final. Super excited about that. Building up to that one next week then, and reflecting on what happened in the League One and League Two showpiece games. Join us for that if you can. Until then, it's goodbye.